Good evening and welcome to Strong and Sassy on Joy 99.7 FM. My name is Noeli Eram Ablayewisi and I'm sitting in for our regular host Enimwa Enim Adun. Tonight we're having a very interesting conversation which has already started in the studio. We're talking about age-related fertility decline. Everything you need to know about it. When it's basically how aging affects fertility and pregnancy. And I have two very formidable women in the studio. They are part of the Fertility Society of Ghana. First is Dr. Gifty Kwashi Ingisa. Yes, she's a medical director of Midway Hospital in Achimota. She's an obstetrician and a gynecologist with special interest in fertility management and antenatal care and delivery. And like I said earlier, she's a member of the Fertility Society of Ghana. Dr. Gifty, good evening.
Good evening.
And I also have Mrs. Teresa Boatima Mante. She's a clinical nurse educator. At the certified family life counselor. She's the CEO of Strong Faith Pregnancy Hub, which is a surrogacy agency. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, like I said, we're talking about age-related fertility decline and everything we need to know. And before the show started, I asked you that, is the biological clock a myth or is it a fact?
So it's not a myth. Biological clock is very, very true. So it differs for both males and females.
Oh, so men also have a clock?
Well, not the same way that females have a clock. But when you take females, okay, so females are born with our eggs. We don't make eggs in our lives.
Okay.
Unlike men who keep making sperms in their lives. And that's where the difference lies.
Mm-hmm.
So for females, I mean, by the time you are in your mom's womb developing, your highest number of eggs is about the time you are five months in your mom's womb. And that's, you would, by the time that the child is born, then you have about 1 million remaining eggs. So you have about 20 million, comes down to like 1 million when you are born. By the time you start puberty, you are doing between 300,000 to 500,000. And then there's a steady decline over the period of time. Even though you are just ovulating an egg a month, there are still others that are declining steadily over a period of time. And they do that till probably you're like 32, and then the rate starts declining faster. And when you get to 37, there's an accelerated decline in the quality and the quantity to the point where it gets to a low level and then you get menopause. So there is a clock for females.
And now we know how the clock works.
Yeah. And for men, even though they keep producing sperms as well in their lifetime, you find that in their 20s to 30s, the capacity they're able to produce is not the same as when they are beyond in their late 40s to 50s. So they also tend to get the quantity and the quality reducing as well.
Yes.
But they can still keep producing well into their old age. Yeah.
And obviously, so if his productivity kind of sort of reduces and your fertility level also declines, then that's how come it becomes difficult as you age.
Yeah, but it's more, the age works more against women because we don't produce eggs. So even if your decline, the quality is also declining. So you may have, but the quality may be getting less than it should be. Yes.
Auntie Teresa,
yes.
What do you want to add to this clock discussion?
Okay. I know our mothers will not believe this when you tell them this, that age declines fertility. But there are studies also to prove that, okay? In that they would challenge you because they are in their 50s, most of them are still having their menses. They haven't gone into menopause. Why? Because we are talking about the declining of the ovaries, okay? Fertility declining. But what helps them is that with the studies, the only time that you are able to preserve your egg is when you're pregnant or breastfeeding, when you are not ovulating.
Yeah.
Okay? So with them, they used to have a lot of children.
Yes.
They breastfeed a lot. And so they are kind of have some prolonged time of going into menopause.
Yes.
So that is where they will disagree with us now. But it happens to those who have delayed pregnancy or not having it at all for a period, then the declining is very fast.
Mm.
You see? So if you happen to have about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 children, the likelihood of you still having some eggs into your old age is high. But what are we seeing today is 1.
True.
2. Or let me finish with my education, get whatever and whatever before I start.
Mm.
And look at the educational, our education system and the years you spend in school.
Yeah.
And sometimes even when you're working, when you have even gotten work, work conditions are saying that you can't get pregnant within a year or whatever, and it all adds up to it.
Well, this conversation is going to just keep getting interesting. If you, we're live on Facebook, so you can share your comments and put your questions there. You can also send us a message on 0 to 0551111197 0551111197. You can also call us on 0302216541. So we've talked about the clock not being a myth. So what is the best time to start having babies?
I mean, so by what I told you, by biology, we say that usually up until 32 years, your eggs are steadily great. The decline starts more from 32, and then it starts accelerating from 37. And you see, it's not so much like she said. Someone will say, okay, but my mom had a child at 48. But you also have to remember, it's not just the quantity that is reducing. The quality of the egg is also reducing. So you are more likely to have children with abnormalities the longer that you wait. Then you can have all the trisomies, the Down syndromes, and all the other kinds of things coming in. So it's not really a question of you can't get pregnant. But then as we also age, and then we are risking that we are going to have more likely having not poor quality eggs, and so getting aberrations in the formation of the babies and other things. Yes.
Teresa, you agree with Dr. Gifty?
Exactly.
So it's the delay affects the quality of the child that you may have.
Yes.
Which is
and the likelihood that you would even have the child. Yes.
So they
can have them told and used for your fertility. If you're a couple and there's some reason why we are delaying, we don't the longer you delay, it's just that the quality becomes less. So that's an option that's available. Obviously, I make it sound like it's so nice, but it's not that simple.
I know.
It's not that simple, yes.
Because I'm
it's
just
not...
imagining you have to, so you have to take some medications to make sure you produce a lot of eggs in that season. Then they'll be harvested.
Yes.
They'll be stored.
Yes. So that's one of the fertility preservation options that are there. Oocyte preservation.
And Teresa, what else can we do?
Okay. So if you ask me, I would say that a lifestyle change.
Changes.
The lifestyle changes I will talk about is think about fertility or childbirth just as you are thinking about your education.
Okay.
Don't put it at the back of all your list of in the life. When you are planning life, plan. I think we should start education, create the awareness, start the education as early as from, how do you call it, when menarche.
Yeah.
When they start having their first menses. Because our developments are not the same. You can even see my daughter there. Look how plump she is. She's 7 years. But if you see her, you see that she's already having the breasts and that. So you can imagine the rate at which the eggs are going in is very fast. Okay. So once we start the education, the girls' education, then you plan it. Planning means what? Don't, I'm not saying just go in for any man.
Exactly. Yeah.
Neither am I saying that.
You have your standards.
Yeah, so, but you have your standard, but you can.
So whilst you are
down the standards small, okay.
Whilst you are planning, you are putting your standards together.
You see, I think the best thing is shine your eye.
You see, when we were children, we had aspirations to be pilots, to be what we. But as time goes on, you cut down and then you go the direction what God wants you to do. To go.
I think we need to add the childbirth to the prayer list. As we're praying for the husband, we are.
Not the prayer list only. The watch and pray.
By thunder, by fire.
You have to watch and pray.
Thank you.
As you're planning for the career,
exactly.
You're planning for the children.
Exactly.
But if you don't want to give yourself so much pressure, then you can also think about the fertility preservation option so that you don't just settle.
So it means that if you're like me, if you can't marry and have a child, make enough money so you can freeze your eggs.
Sure. Yes.
Yes, but that's the bottom line. Yes.
Money.
Exactly.
Yes.
So make enough money, you can freeze your eggs, so you are not under pressure. Then you can live all your best life. Exactly. Then when you get to like your 40s and you change your mind.
Say all your best life.
Live all your best life. Then when you are ready, you come. Now, I want to have this, ask this interesting question. Mm-hmm. How different is infertility from being barren?
Okay, so I think it's just terminology.
Okay.
We don't like to say the word barren. Barren is, you know, barren connotes a negativity to it.
And
like,
has this finality
and has a
too.
Stigma, you know, like, yeah, barren. It means you can never have children.
Okay.
The fact that someone is not having children now doesn't mean they can never, ever, ever have children.
Yeah.
You know, so when we say infertility, and even for me, I prefer to say fertility.
I used to say fertility
assessment. I don't like to say infertility. It makes it feel like, you know, like you can't. So in my diagnosis, I always say fertility assessment, review for fertility. I don't like to put infertility. But infertility really is that you've tried for a year. If you are younger than 35 and it's not happened, then we say we are having challenges, you know. So like she says, some subfertility, some challenges getting pregnant. And if you are more than 35, then if you've done that for 6 months, then we say, okay, we're having some form of fertility challenges there about.
That's there. Is that this question is actually for you as a counselor. Is there a way that people can test their fertility levels before they get married? Because the issue that we see most of the time is people get married, but before they all check for the AS, the blood types, the HIV, but then they check all of that and they're okay, then they get married and they are unable to have. Then you are realizing, okay, maybe this person's egg level is low or their sperm level is low, and then it's an issue. As a counselor, is there a way people can test before they get married?
Sure. As we said earlier, Dr. Eben spoke about it. So there are tests that you can do. It's age related, depending on the age. Yeah, it's called anti-marillian hormone, AMH.
Okay.
And also the level of the FSH, the follicle stimulating hormone. So there are hormones that control this, our ovulation and menopause and menarche, so it can be tested as well. So in relation to your age, the doctor can actually assist you in knowing your position as at that age.
I think I'll probably add on to that. So you know, I don't want us to say that, well, everybody who's going to get married should be testing immediately to get married. Otherwise, people are going to put unnecessary pressure on themselves. So your ability to get pregnant is not 100%. Like when egg and sperm meet, it means you're going to get pregnant. So being pregnant in a month, we call it your fecundability, or the probability that when you have sex this month, you get pregnant. If you took 100 people, nothing was wrong with them, right? In the first month of trying, only 25 will get pregnant.
Wow.
And when they continue to like 3 months, you'd have 57 to 60 of them getting pregnant.
So it increases with time.
With the more times you are doing at the right time. So that's where infertility as a diagnosis comes in. So usually if a young couple comes, and a lot of people are very anxious about getting pregnant, say, look, go and do the deal. Have sex. Dude, 1 year, it's not happening. Then you come and say, okay, what can we do for you? At least you've given the try. Because you can do tests for people and it may come and not be like the within the normal limit, but they can still get pregnant on their own if they were to try for some time. You see, if obviously you're more than 35 years, then you don't want to, after 6 months, you should be coming to hospital. But you want people to at least, you, and this is that, not just, you should be having sex at the time where we expect that you're ovulating.
What is the time? Time is very important.
And frequency. And because sometimes you ask them to have the sex.
Yeah.
And for them, once a month, once twice in a month is
so
enough.
When I say with 6 months, I mean like you've had it at the right time continuously for six months and it's not happened. Or continuously for 1 year and it's not happened. But if
I can see the people in the studio giving me side eye. They are very interested in the time.
In the time.
And the frequency.
Yeah, because I always tell people that Jesus and Mary will never happen again. If you don't have sex, you will not get pregnant. You know, so it's, if you are, and it happens a lot when people have fertility challenges as a couple, it gets it can really affect the relationship, and then it's like now the sex becomes like a transactional thing to have a baby. And so if we're not, you know, we don't have sex till we think that we're ovulating, and it kind of
that doesn't sound nice at all.
But like you're saying, when are you likely to ovulate? Okay, most people don't seem to know when they ovulate. if you have a regular 28-day cycle, mm-hmm. okay, we expect that. So if you take your menstrual cycle, yeah. you can divide it into two parts. The first part where you're now growing the egg, and the second part where the egg is now developing.
They know
the days
part.
And so for if you have a 28-day cycle, we usually would say that between day 12, 14, 16, you're more likely to get pregnant.
Okay.
And if you can use an app to help you.
Yes,
but that is works well when your period is regular. For people whose periods are not regular, an app is telling you you should be ovulating. It doesn't mean you are ovulating.
Okay.
So one thing you can do to actually see, am I ovulating, is you can use ovulation test strips. Okay. So you can start checking for ovulation from, let's say, day 10 or day 11. Mm. You check every evening, you're seeing, am I ovulating? Mm. My negative, I get positive, then it comes negative, I know that I ovulated. Mm. Because having an app is what the general expectation should be. It does not necessarily mean that you are ovulating now. So those are some of the things we can do to be more active about tracking our eggs, and I mean whether we're ovulating. And if you do that for a couple of months, you realize that when I do it, I'm always getting negative. You don't even need to wait for the 1 year, because if you do it for 3 months and you see that it's negative all the time, you should be coming to hospital then.
Now I want to ask, you know, as women, I mean young women, we have these experiences right from secondary school, these cramps. And then, like you mentioned, irregular menstrual cycle. Can they lead to some of these age-related fertility decline issues?
Okay.
I want Aunt Teresa to answer that. She seems like she was very ready for that. The cramps and the irregular menstrual cycles, I want us to start from then. Then we go to the bigger things like the fibroids and all of those things. How does that affect?
Let me touch on the irregular menstrual cycle. It is not what is causing the but it could be a sign that you are not ovulating regularly.
And what causes that? Is it the natural thing?
It's a natural thing.
So I probably will add on to that. I mean, usually when you start off on menarche, you have some people getting very irregular cycles the whole time. Most of the time they are hormonal.
Okay.
And hormonal, now the currently the commonest cause of hormonal issues of the cycle is what we call polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS.
Okay. Please break it down for us, the laymen and women.
PCOS has become very common now, and it's most of the umbrella of all the irregularities you get kind of fall into that place. And when you say PCOS is, I like to say, like, it's baby diabetes, because it is the way you get it all. So any disease that we say that, oh, there are different etiologies of how they are caused, it means we really don't know how they comes about.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the main things that have come to show is that there's something in your, how you metabolize insulin. So your insulin resistance seems to be higher. You know, there's an insulin-like growth factor that seems to be a problem there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find that it tends to run more in family lines with diabetes.
Okay.
Although you may not even have it in your family line to get PCOS. And so for that, because of that imbalance in the insensitivity, the hormones are not carried the way that they should. So people start to express more male hormone characteristics, like the acne and the hair and the male growing hair, so facial hairs, hair on the chest, hair on the stomach. You know, they may even have a whole beard going on, sometimes the bass voice and everything. And then you'd also have that, you would have the irregularities with the cycle. So either they're not coming at all, or they come and you're bleeding all the time, or the cycles are really short. So it's either they are really long, they are really short, or you're bleeding all the time. Yes. And then some people, when you scan them, you would find that they would have polycystic ovaries, you know, on scan. So there are different criteria by which we used to say that somebody has that. It may be once in a while, stress, sometimes change in the environment, or the kind of diet, you may just make your cycle change a little bit. Or you move to a different place and you find that my period didn't come when I was writing an exam, I was so stressed, and all of a sudden my period came. So stress may do that, but it's not, stress should not like change your alter it completely, like for 6 months, 1 year, your cycle is just very messed up. You need to go and investigate and find out what's happening. And like she said, sometimes, even though we say that the limits are that averagely the egg decline is up to from 32, you know, it's very steady and then it can decline, there are some people who tend to get an egg decline way before that, and we call that premature ovarian failure.
Wow.
So there's people, I have patients who are in their 20s, and they are no longer, they are menopausal. Because, so when we talk about age-related fertility, we want people to be more aware, to know how to go and check for yourself, be more active and be more proactive, because somebody will come in and you realize that, oh my goodness, this person has already gotten, the period wasn't coming, you think, oh, it's just irregular, it's been like that, and then, boom, you're coming and there's nothing left any longer.
So from what I'm hearing you say, it's like we need to be having this conversation as often as we do things like breast cancer awareness.
Well, yes.
Because I was surprised when I tried to have this conversation. I realized that some of my friends don't know this.
Yeah.
And we don't have this conversation enough.
Yeah.
So is this how accessible do our facilities for this? Can I just walk into any hospital and say, I'm going to be 35 soon, I'm here. What can you do? How many eggs do I have left?
I think the most gynae would be, if you walk into a fertility facility or any gynae, should be able to at least take you through the baseline testing for how your fertility is going at the moment. Yes, but like I said, if you come, we also don't want it to be that if you don't have you can check, you know. And when you check, because the thing I get a lot from people coming in and saying, oh, I want to check my, you know, how am I doing it? Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so when you check, then what?
I mean, if you, I feel like...
You know, that's the next question that goes on.
Yes, because if you check...
When we check, then what? So if we check, and I like what she said, the way you plan education and everything,
exactly.
You should plan your fertility.
Yes.
Because we check and we say, okay, your AMH is, you know, lower than is expected for your age. So, you know, you have to...
Exactly. So I think
let me tell you a story.
Tell me this story.
Yes. When I was in nursing school, way back 1990, that was the first time I had dysmenorrhea. I had never had dysmenorrhea.
This, what is that?
Painful menses, as she said. I have never had it from the time I had my first menses till I was in nursing school. And so there was this doctor then. I think the scans and, you know, the technology has not gone this
advanced,
far.
Yeah.
So the doctor one day called me and after admission said, Teresa, I want to tell you something. You know, I'm married to a Russian lady. My wife had the same issue. And because of that, we've never had a child since. And you've seen me having an affair with a nurse in the hospital. Not that I am that type, but culture and pressure on me is making me do what I don't like to do. If I have to advise you, I would advise you that please start opening your eyes. And if the opportunity comes for you to get pregnant, don't miss it. And you know what I said? Wherever he is today, if he's watching me, he will say it, that, hey, today you are confessing. I told myself, are you this young doctors? You have finished impregnating this one, you are coming to me.
You thought that the with doctor this, was trying to yob
yes,
me.
Yes, you yob me to
he
come to
her
me
a preamble.
Again.
He was giving
and,
her a preamble.
And truly, truly, it happened.
Yeah.
I never got pregnant, even into my marriage, about 10 years.
Wow.
That was when I realized that, he was telling me something I should have been careful of. I'm saying this because I listened to some of your programs earlier on, and I realized that those who are treating infertility become so emotional that it's even difficult sometimes to even approach them, to talk to them concerning these issues.
Because how do you approach it?
So the more we create the awareness, I think it will be easier for people to...
Another question I have is, I mean, like, we're having this conversation and like you shared about this menstrual cramps, are there any other underlying conditions we should be looking at? For example, I'll use myself as an example, and this question is about me. So if you have maybe someone who has a history of high blood pressure in your family, for me, one of the things that I stress about or worry about is, how can this affect my pregnancy? Or how can this affect me in pregnancy? And I've seen how some women even develop that in pregnancy and how that worries them. And so I ask myself, do I really want to do this?
Yeah. But, you know, I think even when you started introducing the show, you talked about the fact how it's affecting fertility and pregnancy.
Yes.
Now, the truth is that the older you go, the more likely you are to get complications with pregnancy, you know. And so things like BP, if it's in your family, I mean, usually the older you go, you expect that the more likely you get it. Notwithstanding, younger people can still have BP in pregnancy.
Because I was diagnosed in my 20s.
Yeah, if it's in the family line. Even for the severe form of BP in pregnancy, which you call eclampsia, tends to happen to younger, much younger girls than the older ones. Yes, the two extremes. So very old or very young, you're more likely to get that happening. And so with age, both fertility and pregnancy become a challenge, you know. Yes. Now, there, in as much as we're talking about the fertility, you know, your capacity decline and others as well, if you realize that you have a problem gynecologically, either your periods are not regular, you have severe pain with the periods, or intermittently you're having period pains, I mean pains when it's not your period in between, you need to go and check. Sometimes people like to push things away because they don't want to go and check for them to get bad news.
Yes.
So they would rather... Is it ignorance is bliss, you know? Yeah. And then when you're now ready and someone has come, you come in and you've got like fibroids all the way up to, you know, like someone who's like 8 months pregnant, size fibroids kind of thing. And then we are now having to go through so much to get around getting pregnant and all of that.
My next question was going to be about three things. And someone has sent a question on that. I'll read that later. So fibroids, ovarian cyst, and then
endometriosis.
Endometriosis. What is I've seen people who are suffering from that, and so please break those down, and how can that affect
fertility
and pregnancy?
All right. So if you take fibroids are just cells in the uterus. So it's not when people say, is it a wawa wujim or not any ma wujim? No, it's nothing like that. It's your uterus.
So okay? It grows in.
It is the uterine tissue that has just, you know, every cell in your body, there's a clock that says you grow to a point and you have to stop growing. Okay? And when that stop clock becomes defective, you would have cells overgrowing, and then you can get what we call a tumor. Yes. If they overgrow and they cross the organ in which they are in, then we say that it's cancer. But if they overgrow and they stay within the organ, then you get things like fibroids. We can get bony growths and all kinds of things. So fibroids are just cells that have lost the ability to stop growing, and they have uterine cells, smooth muscles that have just become overgrown and become big, and they can keep growing and growing, but they are still located within the uterus. And fibroids, usually you would have a genetic predisposition to getting fibroids. If someone has uncontrolled hypertension over a long period of time, they are more likely to get fibroids. Obesity can also give you fibroids. Your diet can also affect your likelihood to get fibroids and whatnot as well. So having fibroids technically does not mean that you cannot get pregnant. You know, unless you have fibroids that are occluding your cavity, when we say a submucous nodule, so it grows into the cavity of the uterus, and so then it's implantation cannot occur, you know, or it's bilaterally blocking your tubes, so sperms can't get into your tubes. Because if you take five African women, you know, three of them out of five would probably have fibroids. They are very common in black.
This is something we also need to be checking on a regular.
And so people come to you and say, oh, I did a scan and then they said I had a fibroid. Does that mean I can't get pregnant? No. Having fibroids does not necessarily mean that you can't get pregnant. But when you do get pregnant and you have fibroids, it can complicate your pregnancy. It may give you increase the likelihood of you getting a miscarriage or preterm labor or something of the sort. So that's it for fibroids. Okay.
What's it, Teresa? Ovarian cyst. What is it? Dr. Gifty, do you want to walk us through
Walk us through.
Okay, so when people say ovarian cyst, you know, I've come to realize that when Ghanaians say ovarian cyst, there are two different things they're talking about.
I know, that's why I wanted to dive into it.
Yeah, so when we say ovarian cyst, most people actually mean polycystic ovarian syndrome. And then, so when, that's what I talked about, that it gives you hormonal abnormalities. So they go and do a scan and they say, oh, they had ovarian cyst. They say, it's actually polycystic ovaries. So they had hormone abnormalities and they did a scan. Then we've got cysts that, the same way that I talked about the cells refusing to stop in the uterus, you can have cells refusing to stop in the ovary. And so then you can have a cyst becoming really, really, really big to the point where usually when a cyst goes beyond 6-7 centimeters, then we are worried that it can twist because the ovary doesn't have any, you know, bony structural appendage holding. It's a free organ that's just as a ligament. So it can twist on itself and then you can actually get like loss of blood supply to it, and then you need to have a surgery because you get severe pain and we'll have to go and remove the ovary from there. So that's what we mean. So that ovarian cyst is the one that is surgery. So when people say ovarian cyst, they usually have to say, what kind of ovarian cyst are they talking about? Yeah, so that is the surgery one. And even for that, if you take someone and you scan them, you know, depending on the time of their cycle, they may have some small cyst or whatever. If it persists for longer than a period of some months, then you see that it's a problem. So it's not every ovarian cyst that's a problem. Once it's less than 6 centimeters, you can have functional ovarian cysts that are just part of the cycle. So if you scan and they see an ovarian cyst, it doesn't mean that like everything is going wrong.
I'm asking these questions because I mean, these are, like you said, are things that people throw around all the time. So I wonder if maybe somebody has been diagnosed or hear about it, so they don't get overly worried and then go and find out, like you're saying, which type you have. And then the final one would be endo.
So endometriosis is it's one of those things as well that we say that there are different ways by which it comes, which we don't know how exactly it comes, but basically the cells lining the inside of the uterus, so the endometrial cells, you find them in other places other than that side. So whenever, and the endometrium, what happens, it grows so that when your period comes, it sheds and you bleed. So if you find it in another place, it means that at the time when you're menstruating, you'll be bleeding wherever the tissue is as well. So if it's lying in your ovary, then it means you're going to be bleeding, and then the ovary, they're going to have a cyst forming and becoming big there. And so that's another kind of ovarian cyst, what you say is an endometrioma. They get a big cyst filled with blood. You can have it, even some people have it in the belly button. So you find that when their period comes, they start bleeding from the belly button. And those severe ones, you can have it in your lung. So the lung, the cavity in the lung, and so when the period comes, they bleed into the lungs as well. So those are different manifestations. And because you bleed in other places other than the uterus, it's associated with pain because you are bleeding into an enclosed space. So they tend to get very severe period pains. That gets worse as the period progresses. You know,
So if you're having consistent, painful periods, it's something that
you need to check out.
Because sometimes what most of us used to do, and you know, this thing starts in excess, right? You go and lie down at the sick bay small, it'll give you something to power through those days, and then we move on. And for some of us, I'm being honest, that's how we coped all through high school and went to uni. And now, if you walk into any pharmacy and say, oh, I'm having, they'll just give you something to sort you out. But as we're having this conversation, I feel like if you keep having these, these are some things that you need to check out.
It's very important to check, because we tend to find that so many females every month, they are taking painkillers. And a lot of people are taking NSAIDs. And remember, the chronic kidney disease is also on the rise. And if you keep taking medications all the time, you are increasing your risk for getting those in the long term. So rather than symptomatically treating yourself, it's better to go and see a gynecologist, but be well investigated. There are so many things. If it's primary, there's no cause for why it is, and you're having it, there are hormones we can give you. There are so many things we can do to relieve your pain. You don't need to suffer for menstrual pain.
And I think that even as a parent, if you have a young child or your daughters who are menstruating and they keep telling you, I think that this is the best time to take them to the hospital to make sure that they get checked out, to make sure it's not anything big. Now, we've talked about the eggs, they keep declining, and then the one that can surprise you is that you finally find your guy, your egg is finished. Now, this is you. You've planned a life, everything is JJ, you finally don't know, now your egg is finished. What I need to know is, before we get there, right, are there anything else we should be looking out for that will show us that, okay, maybe your egg is declining or your sperm level is coming down?
Okay, so sometimes that you will not find anything. There's no symptom. You just go and check and you realize that the egg is down.
Finished.
But for most people, you'd find that there's a change in your cycle. So if you may start having longer cycles, shorter cycles. The same way, that's why she was mentioning the fact that when you have irregularities in the cycle, it may be a sign that your eggs are declining. So when you start getting it, because you don't just suddenly get menopause. Menopause is when, like, you finally stop having a period for more than a year. it takes, we have a perimenopausal transition, and that's where the decline and things are going on. Mm-hmm. So you can have either the cycle getting shorter, the cycle getting longer, you know, and those are things that may be a sign that, hey, your eggs are really starting to decline. You realize that your cycle has been consistent your whole life, and all of a sudden now the number of days you're bleeding for seems to be reducing.
And you know that is actually a cause for rejoice. But now, you people are making it sound like it's not a cause to rejoice.
Yeah.
We have some messages I want to read, and then...
I think since we have discussed the age declining in women, when you finally get your man, and like doctor said, you've tried, depending on your age, for either a year or 6 months, when visiting the obstetrician or the doctor, go with your partner. Let the partner be tested early. So that her inability or his problem, would not delay you.
Can you expand more on that?
So I'm saying that, okay, we have now learned that with women, age can affect our fertility.
Yes.
Good. So if you finally find your man, and depending on your age,
depending
on the age you, the woman, your age.
Yes.
Okay, and even him.
His age as
well. And then you happen to have regular sex for a year or 6 months, as we discussed earlier on. And you now want to visit the doctor. Don't go alone thinking you are the woman is the only problem.
Yeah.
Because the man's challenge might add up to your clock ticking. You might go and they might say nothing is wrong with you, and then then fine, I'm waiting.
Oh, okay, so he may have the problem, but then because you didn't go with him, you wouldn't know
exactly. So our delay, the cause of our delay or our of ours is related to the men.
Exactly. Because if you're fine and his sperm count is low, then you think there's something wrong. By the time we find out what's wrong with him, your eggs are
finished.
Oh.
And it's happening.
50% of the time, fertility challenges are male factor. 50% is female factor. So if a couple has a challenge, it's best that they go together so that you're worked on together.
Sure.
The thing with men is that it takes a little longer to treat a man. You have to, when the sperm you produce today, you ejaculate today, you produced it 3 months ago, and it took 3 months to mature before you've now ejaculated it. So if you want to treat a man, you technically have like a 3 month window of having to do treatment.
To get the man to come to the hospital take 6 months.
So that's a year. So that is the delay she means. Like, it's going to delay you, it's going to be another problem.
So once you realize that you've married or you're having consistent sex without protection and you're not getting pregnant, you should not be happy.
Yeah.
You should know that something might be wrong.
If after a year of unprotected sex, regular unprotected sex, you're not getting pregnant, and you need to come in to be checked.
About the regular. I think we've mentioned regular, doctor.
Yeah.
It's about 3 to 4 times a week. Enjoy sex and let the sperms flow in the system.
Come again. Wait, you mean that the regular should be how many times a week?
Doctor,
it's a minimum of 3 times.
A minimum of 3 times a week.
3 times a week.
In this Accra.
Yes.
Hey, is it in traffic?
But most importantly, we realize that Accra pressure can come, but it's good to know your ovulation and track your ovulation and make sure that when you're ovulating, you have sex. Because if you have sex when you're not ovulating, it doesn't mean anything. So if this month I had sex and I wasn't ovulating, I wasn't my time of ovulation.
Lucky.
And that, you see, when we say 3 times a week, then we are more likely that we need a baby. And that's wherein we start having marriage. It's 2 weeks time, I have a period again. That's a problem.
That's in 14 days.
That's a problem. So then you want to check. If it's not within shorter than 21 days, then you want to be checking, why is that happening? That's not normal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So whoever sent us a message, if, like doctor said, if it's within 28 days,
if it's within your cycle, so your average cycles are between 24-32 days. If
so
it's falling in your cycle like that, that means,
but I mean, 14 days apart, you need to go and get checked. Now someone says, I have my menstrual cycle and it comes for 4 days or 5 days. I was diagnosed of ovarian cyst and its symptoms showing on me is acne. I took Yasmin. I don't know what that is. Yeah. For 3 months for the ovarian cysts and hormones, would this affect my fertility chances? Mine is the hormonal imbalance.
I like that she the first thing other that. Yeah, so I mean, so this person, the background will be that a person has polycystic ovarian syndrome,
okay,
where you have more male expression, and acne is one of the things that come with hyperandrogenism.
Oh, okay.
And so Yasmin is a form of a contraceptive pill that we use in treating patients with PCOS. So okay. PCOS, because of the period irregularity, when you want to correct the cycle, sometimes we give you hormone pills or combined oral contraceptive pills. And Yasmin is one of the types of oral contraceptive pills that you have. That should not affect, you know, I mean, because it's actually even preventing you from ovulating.
Okay.
That should not affect your fertility decline and we are talking about, no, in any way. No.
So, I mean, we have just a few minutes to go, but like we said, we should be having this conversation as often as we do the breast cancers. So before we go, what do you want our listeners to know about this age decline, age-related fertility issues, and why they need to come and see you, visit the fertility association, or go and see a gynae as soon as possible?
Yeah, so I'll put it in 3 things.
Yes.
The reality is that we do have a clock for females.
Yes.
And our eggs decline in quantity and quality as we age.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have, you're not married, you don't have anybody, and you are growing and it doesn't look like you're going to be getting pregnant anytime, please consider the options of fertility preservation, where you can preserve your eggs and put them down so you don't have any pressure on you.
Yes.
Now, if you're married and you're not getting pregnant, okay, you don't need to sit in the house and say, I'm waiting. The Lord works through people, okay? So, and we know that there are problems that occur. Come to hospital, and she said, come with your partner so that we can start doing something now. It's not like you wait for 4 years, it's not happening, before we now come to hospital. And by that time, maybe we got married at 36 years, and then 4 years, we are now 40, 41 years, and we say, oh, our eggs are not looking great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so the third thing is, in as much as we are talking about fertility decline, I think we don't want to also give people pressure and say, hey, you need to go and find a man, you need to make a baby right now. I don't think that's what we want to push across.
Yeah.
But you should be more conscious, and like she said, plan it like you plan your life.
Yes.
So that you start thinking about it early and making the right decisions early.
Mm-hmm. Auntie Teresa, your final words before we go?
Okay, thank you. So my final words is that let's see fertility as a disease that can be prevented and be managed. Just as we get diagnosed with other diseases and take the diseases to churches for prayers because they've diagnosed me as this, I would encourage ourselves to get the diagnosis. You come to hospital when you have infertility issues. Let's get to the root of it.
Right.
You can add prayers whilst you manage the medical.
Thank you, Auntie Teresa. Thank you, Dr. Gifty. Thank you to my producers, Abeku and Mirabel. My name is Ariel. We'll see you same time next week. It's bye for now.